We'll just go into the word. We can, if you can turn to Deuteronomy 29, verses 12 to 13. Deuteronomy 29, verses 12 to 13. Also, we're going to have everything in our mobile app, so you can go to App Store or Google Play Store and then just type in HMCC. We're going to have sermon notes where you can fill in the blank and follow along with the message. I just wanted to give a brief overview of the sermon series. 365, we called it 365. Because as we're looking back at the last year, 360, today I think is 363 days or so, and we wanted to look back at this whole year, all the days that have happened, and really see what is it that God has done. We wanted to review, look back, and say, God, you know, you've really been faithful this whole time. And then next week, we're going to continue on in part two. We're going to reload. We're going to say, God, now that we're starting this new year, how can we get refreshed and refocused to say, you know, whatever it is that you have for me in 2019, I want to be part of that. So we're going to look forward to that next week. But today, this morning, I just wanted to start off with a question. That when you think back to this year in 2018, what's the first word that comes to mind? When you think back to everything that happened, whether it was world events, how you bombed your finals, how hard work was, what happened in family or friendships, what's the first word that comes to mind? A lot of people might say it was really hard, or wow, there were so many things that changed, or oh, it was a really, really good year. But oftentimes when we think about that question, you know, it takes us a moment because we forgot what happened this past year. When we look back at videos or photos, we're like, wow, there is so much that has transpired over 365 days. Which is somewhat of a problem because as we're looking forward to 2019, we're making New Year's resolutions, setting goals. Oftentimes we set off in this new year without really looking back to learn from the things that have happened. And so that's why I wanted to show us a video on one company's take on what happened in 2018. Because oftentimes when we do these reviews, it's something that helps us to understand what happened so that we can move forward in a certain direction. So I wanted to give you a small company called Google, their take on what happened in 2018. Again, this doesn't represent HMCC. This is their take on what happened and their view of the world. So let's watch this video together. All right. So Google's marketing message there is that keep searching in Google search engine because we're searching for good things, right? And they're hoping that that advertisement is going to make you feel good and that you go to Google and search for other things that you want to look forward to in 2019, which is great because that's Google. And when I was just watching that video though, I was like, wow, so many things have happened and they condensed it all into 2 minutes or so. But it, I don't know, something about it made me like, oh yeah, I want to participate in doing good. I want to be part of that. I want my video to be in that video somehow. And that's Google's take on this past year. Their take is that people search for good things. Presumably because 2018 was a really bad year, right? Their take is, let's look for the good things that happened this past year. But if Google says that this past year was good, my question is, for if we were to make our own video, to say a year in review in 2018, what would be the central theme for this past year? What would be that one word or that one phrase that determines what happened? Something that we say oftentimes in our church is that the way you end one season is the way that you're going to enter into the next season. And if that's true, then how we look back onto this past year is going to dictate and determine how we start the next year in 2019. And that's why asking and reviewing, how does this season go for you? How did this year happen? It's going to determine how we're going to take steps forward. It's going to determine what are we going to do differently? What resolutions are we going to kind of make? And what if, just take a moment to think about, what if we ended this season really seeing God was so good and He did so many things? And that allowed us to step into this 2019 saying, you know what, God? Because you've been so good, that means I have hope. That means I have joy. That means I have something to look forward to instead of just another year or I have to repeat and do the same things over and again. That's why I want to give us the one thing this morning. If there's just one thing that we can remember, it's that we must see what God has done to step forward in the new year. It's we must see what God has done to step forward in the new year. And as we look through this passage, we're going to talk about how Moses and the Israelites, they were able to see what God did. And as they saw what God did, they were able to step forward in faith into the future. And I want to give us 2 points. We're going to talk about 2 things as we see what God has done to step forward in the new year. The first point is that we need to recognize God in everything. We need to recognize God in everything. Hopefully you've turned to Deuteronomy chapter 29, starting at verse 2. We're just going to read the first 2 verses. I'm going to read verses 2 and 3 together. It says, "And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, 'You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, to all his servants, to all his land, the great trials that your eyes saw, the signs, and those great wonders.'" So as we're talking about recognizing God and everything, there are two smaller points that I want us to notice in order to help us to recognize God in everything. The first is that we have to recognize our blindness. We have to recognize that we don't see everything that God sees. We have to recognize there are some things that we might have missed. And when we look into this passage in Deuteronomy, just to give us some context, is that the Israelites now, they're on the plains of Moab. If you don't know where Moab is, that's okay, because I don't either. As we look into, they're in the plains of Moab, and this is right before they go into the Promised Land. So Israel has traveled through the wilderness and through the desert for 40 years. And Deuteronomy, the whole book of Deuteronomy, is just Moses speaking to the Israelite people to say, this is now what you must do before you get in to the Promised Land. In Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, it was all exciting journey of them leaving Egypt, going through the wilderness, traveling through all these places. But the whole book of Deuteronomy, it's like a pause. It's like during Chinese New Year when, you know, you're about to leave, but one of those aunties like, "Hey, let me tell you another story." And you're like, "Oh, come on. Like, you know, I was ready about to go." And the Israelites, they might have felt that way. They might have felt like, "Oh, we're almost there." But then Moses says, "This is something very, very important for you to know before you go in." So what is it that Moses says is so important for them to recognize God in everything? Well, the first thing that we notice is a repetition and emphasis on the theme of seeing. In verse 2, it says, "You have seen all that the Lord did. In verse 2, again later, it says, "Before your eyes in the land of Egypt." In verse 3, it says that your eyes saw the great trials that your eyes saw, the signs and those great wonders. And Moses is saying right in the beginning, he said, you saw what God did. All the great things. All the plagues that God poured out upon Pharaoh. The locusts. The blood. All the different miracles that God did against Pharaoh in order to let Israel go out of Egypt. And he's saying, you saw that. You experienced that. And sometimes, you know, initially when I was reading this, I was like, oh, wow, Moses is very encouraging. He's a very encouraging person, affirming them, helping them to see what God did. But that's not what Moses is really doing. He's really just setting them up for the next thing that he's about to say. Let's read that in verse 4. It says, "But to this day, the Lord has not given you a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear." Right in the beginning, after he says, look, you've seen all the things that God has done. You've seen all the miracles. And then immediately he says, but, hold on, wait a second. You haven't actually seen. I want to read that verse 4 again in the New Century Version. It says, "But to this day, the Lord has not given you a mind that understands. You don't really understand what you see with your eyes or hear with your ears." You don't really understand what you see with your eyes or hear with your ears. That's the great irony. And this is the thing that Moses is trying to help the Israelites to understand. Is that even though they saw all the great miracles that happened in Egypt, through the 40 years of being in the desert, they didn't see, they didn't really understand what God was doing that whole time. The great irony is that they saw something. They experienced it. They went through that their clothes didn't wear out. Their sandals didn't wear out. They have not eaten bread, but they didn't go hungry. They had manna every single day. But they didn't see them as miracles. They saw something, they heard something, but they didn't really hear it. I think this is something that, you know, my mom always calls me out for. She always says that Asian phrase like, oh, everything I say goes in one ear and out the other. I'm like, yes, mom, whatever, right? Like, I don't know, some of you parents might experience that with your kids nowadays, right? It's so frustrating as a parent to be saying something that you think is so important that your kids want to understand, and you're like, yes, mom, okay, dad. And I'm sure none of us have ever done that to our parents, right? There's something about human nature where we just hear something, but we don't really hear it. We don't really get it. We don't really understand what happened. And we somehow think that we know better. I mean, isn't that just like us when we think about the past year, the past couple years of our lives? That there's some things that we saw, we experienced, but we don't really understand. It didn't really hit down into our hearts. Some of us, we received Jesus Christ for the first time. Maybe the last year, maybe the last 2 years, or maybe some of us, we got baptized recently. And then back then, it was great. It was like Egypt. It was like, wow, like plague. No, just kidding. You didn't have plagues in your lives, but it was like amazing. Like God is so good and I'm so thankful. And then after a while, like that honeymoon period wears off and now you are like, you're a year old Christian and you're like, oh, I don't feel God. Like God isn't doing anything in my life. Like what happened to that feeling back then where God was so good? Some of us, we just became part of our church in the last year, a couple years, and that first life group, it was like so good. Like, oh my God, like it was so good. And it was amazing. And now you're in a new life group this year and you're like, oh, why isn't this life group as good as last year's life group? For those of you who aren't part of our life group, it's okay. You should try it and definitely join and sign up. For those of you who are visiting, if you ever come back to Hong Kong, we'd love you to join our community. Some of us, we compare, we make the comparison saying like, oh, that first life was so good and everything was about me and I got served so much and now I'm asked to do things. It's like, why? And then we somehow begin to think that, oh, you know, God isn't in my life anymore. What's going on? I'm doing things, but I don't really see how God is at work. Sometimes it's not just our church lives, right? Some of us, we just got a new job. And the first 6 months of that job was like amazing. And then after those couple months, you start to realize, oh, this job isn't as great as I thought it was. The organization isn't as put together as I thought it was. My pay isn't as great as I thought it was. Some of us, our grades, school was so awesome that first year, right? Those of you who are freshmen, first years, now you're second years, and you're like, oh, wow, life is hard, school is hard. Now I'm just going to go through another season of finals. There's just something about human nature where we experience something the first time, and it's really awesome and inspiring, but somewhere along the way that we continue to experience it, and we just get numb to it. And then that's where we begin to complain. That's where we begin to sin. We go back to our own ways. That's where we begin to rebel. And we discredit all the things that God has and continues to do in our lives day to day. And some of us, we might be reading this passage and we're like, wait, but that's not my fault, that's God's fault. You know, it's God's fault that He made humans the way that we are, just so that anything that's repetitive, the same old, that we just get numb to it. Or we look in this passage and we're like, God, In that verse, it says, you know, you told us. It says, you did not give us a mind to understand. It says, you didn't help us to understand. So it's God's fault. And sometimes we might ask, is this really my responsibility? Or is this really God's responsibility? Of course, it's our responsibility. And God is saying, no, it's on us to be able to remember and to see and to recognize that actually it's been God working the whole time. I want to read a verse in Matthew chapter 13, verses 14 to 15 in the New International Version. It says, in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. This is Jesus now speaking about a prophecy from the book of Isaiah. And he's talking about people who heard Jesus' teachings, but they didn't really understand it. They didn't really internalize it. He says, you will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and in turn, and turn, and I would heal them. And what is he saying? Verse 15 here, it says, for this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. He's saying, yes, in the sovereignty of God, God is in control of everything. And so, yes, you haven't heard because ultimately God is in control. But it's your responsibility. You have closed your eyes. You have chosen not to hear. You have chosen to say, okay, this is so great, this first year in Life Group, or when I first received Christ, or when I first got this job. But somewhere along the way, you just went about business as usual, life as usual, and you decided, you made the decision to say, okay, now I'm going to look at my circumstance, and I don't see anything that God is doing. I'm just going about life as usual, and I don't see. And I'm closing my eyes, and I'm closing my ears, and I am not actively investigating and recognizing what God has done. Maybe we don't intellectually say that. I don't think any of us will be like, oh yeah, I don't believe God is good, or I don't believe God is there, or I don't believe God is present in my life. But by our actions, that's what we say. By that way that we think, by our attitudes, it shows that we believe God is absent. It shows that we believe God is disinterested. It shows that we believe God doesn't care. And it's by the way that we blame God, by the way that we just say, okay, God, forget it, this holiday break, I'm just going to be lazy. I'm just going to not do anything. I deserve a break because that year was so hard. Or some of us, we just do things because we have to. We're supposed to. God told me to, so I guess I got to do it. And it's going to be the same thing over and over again. And our attitude is more like we have to do it because God said so, rather than we want to because God has blessed us. And some of us, we look back to 2010, we're like, that was a horrible year. And we somehow think that, oh, I just got to get past it. And then 2019 is going to be better. It's going to be much better. But what is it that's going to change in 2019 that's going to make your year better? Your circumstances? Your job's going to get better? Is it your new life group that's going to meet all your needs and cater to you again like you were that first year again? Your boss is going to miraculously change? Oh, it's 2019. All right, now everything's going to go well for you. No. It's your attitude that has to change. It's your perspective that has to change. And the only way that our attitude and our perspective is going to change is when we recognize that maybe we are blind. Maybe we didn't see what God has been doing this whole year. And when we see and we look and we realize, wow, he's actually been working this whole time, that we will have a perspective of joy, of hope, of purpose, looking forward to something new that's going to happen. That was me this past year in 2018. I was like just waiting for the break. I was at work and I was just like, okay, I just can't wait until the holidays. I only get a few days off, but I just can't wait until I don't have to see, you know, the work that I have to do. I don't have to be like constantly worrying about ministry. Like it was even to the point where I was like, I just can't wait. And even this week, I was like, I can't wait until I finish the sermon. Because after the sermon, I'm like, yes, I'm free. I can like do whatever. And next week, Pastor Seth is going to preach. So I'm free. And like, there's something in me that was like, yeah, I just can't wait to get over this time because, you know, once this is over, then next year is going to be different. After the break, it's going to be different. And I was like realizing, I was like studying this passage and I was like, that's not the right attitude to have. And if I constantly am just waiting for the next thing, then I'm totally forgetting all the things that God has done. And I wanted to show some photos that helped me to reflect and realize some things that God really did. And the miracles that he did, not only just in my personal life, but also in our whole church. And when I look back and I was like, wow, God really made an impact on people. In all the time that I spent, all the frustrations that I went through, all the disappointments that I have, in spite of those things, the things that made it hard, God was really working through all of it. So just 2018, quick recap. The first photo is our congregational retreat. This is our, I think, our third congregational retreat, our largest congregational retreat that we ever had. And it was amazing. Actually, for me, it was, my first time preaching at a retreat. And I really had a good time as I was thinking about that. Later on in the year, in April, we had our graduate recognition. We prayed for, I think, over 17 people who graduated. We sent them out. Some of them are still here in Hong Kong. Others have left. We had our Good Friday Easter celebration. And, you know, during that time, I know sometimes some of us like statistics, other people don't. But there were people that week that received Jesus for the first time. I was putting that in perspective. I was like, you know, God, like, there's so many times I complained during that season because I was so busy. But God was so good. He really impacted people. He touched people's lives. Later on during the summer, we had our third Ignite conference. It's a student missions conference where we came together. We had a guest speaker as Pastor Dean, and some of us, we still remember all of his stories of just how God moved into his life so powerfully. And I was like, wow, like, it gave me so much perspective, not just to think inside of our church, but outside, what God was doing outside of our church and how he was moving in people's hearts and how he was wanting us to go to the nations. During that summer, we sent out a missions team. Earlier in the year, we actually sent out a local missions project. That's the top photo. The bottom photo is the China missions project that went out to China. And it's incredible because we've been praying for people to go on missions and respond to this call. Not pictured there, I forgot to mention, is we sent out a smaller team to go to Chongqing and Chengdu to do training for the Alive discipleship curriculum. Some of you may not have been here, but we've been developing a curriculum to make disciples through all the nations, and they were able to go there. Also, there's a team going to UK right now, and they're there ministering to Chinese students and youth and families. And I was like, wow, there's so many opportunities, so many things that God is doing around the nations. The next photo is Operation Campus Reach. I think. Oh, there's no photo. Sorry about that. Okay. Well, Operation Campus Reach. It's a week where, you know, we all come back to be able to reach out to the campuses, to the city, to our workplaces. And I was looking back at the photo and it was like, there were so many people in our church that were willing to give up that time to be able to reach out to people. Do we have a Harvest Games photo? This is our Harvest Games. I think our fourth now? Third or fourth Harvest Games. And some of you remember which life group won? I'm just kidding, sorry. It was my life group that won. But, I mean, it's not just about winning, but it was amazing because, I think every single time we get together at Harvest Games, really, I'm thinking about next year, I'm like, I don't know if we're gonna be able to find a place to be able to have our whole church gather together in one room and play these games. Cause we're just growing. We're just growing, and God is bringing people to experience God in community. And I just remember talking to many leaders and saying Harvest Games was such a pivotal moment for their life group to come together and to bond and for people to get connected. After Harvest Games, we had a new members recognition, and we have people commit to our church for the first time. And I think this past year, we had 13 new members in March, I think around 9 or so in July, and I think 27 or so this past year. There's almost 50 people who became members in our church this past year in 2018. I was like, wow, that's like almost the size of this room. There's a lot of people. And the last thing I wanted to share is the number of people that got baptized, or the photos of the people that got baptized this past year, 2018. We had two baptisms, and I think in April there were 8 or so. This past December we had 13. We had over 20 people get baptized. Can we give God a hand for all the things He's done? And thank you to the documentations team and the PowerPoint team for putting up the photos. Give them a hand as well. Okay. And I was looking back at these pictures and I was like, wow, like, it's just some photos, right? It's just a couple photos. And then sometimes when I'm just on my own, I'm just thinking about the past year, I don't even remember. Like, some of you who know me, my memory is horrible. I can't even remember, like, last week what I did. But I was looking back in these photos like, wow, I remember being there. You know, I remember talking to people there. I remember participating. I remember serving. I remember, you know, just praying for those gatherings or those things that I was involved with. And many of you, you might have photos of your life group or your fellowship, wherever that you've been. And you look back and you're like, wow, God has done so many things that I didn't even see. I didn't even remember. Like, I saw it. I was there. And you're like looking through the photo. You're like, oh, I was in that photo. But it wasn't until you really look back and you're saying, oh, what did God do? And you realize, wow, God did something amazing during that time in this whole year that you totally missed out on. And that's how I felt. And as I'm looking at these photos and I'm thinking, and I'm like, God, you know, I've been so blind. I've been so blind to all the things that you have done. I've been so blind because all I've been doing is focusing on myself and my current situation and my dissatisfaction and my complaints and my blaming of other people, that I missed out on all the crazy things that you've accomplished this past year. And I'm wondering if we can look back. And I know some of us, we like journaling. If you don't do any reflection, you need to reflect. You need to go back and remember what happened this past year. You need to set aside some time to say, you know, God, from January, February, March, April, all the way through each month, what did you do? What was I going through? If some of you have a journal, look back at that journal. Some of you who journal, you never look back. And you miss out on all the things that God has done, all the struggles you went through. But now as you look through all the struggles, you know, I don't know how many of you have done this before. You journal and then you look back at your journal from like a year ago and you're like, oh my God, this, you're like, you're throwing up. You're like, I can't believe I wrote this. But now that you have a different perspective, now that you're out of that situation, you're like, wow, God has been faithful. I'm here. I'm alive. God is good. I still have, whether it's family or friends, I'm still enrolled into school. I still have a job. Like, wow, God has been really good. And I want to encourage some of us. I know some of us, we take written journals. I want to encourage us to look back at some photos. Go back in your WhatsApp groups, in your life group. Go back to your Facebook. Go back to your Instagram. Your Finstagram. You post all those little random photos. But sometimes it's like rants about your life and different things you went through. Go back and look at it and see what God has done from that situation till now. And recognize, yeah, you know what, God, maybe I was wrong. Maybe my attitude, my perspective right now is really limited. And we want to recognize our blindness. That's the first thing. And like we saw in those photos, we want to also recognize God's work. We want to recognize God's work, and Moses talks about this in verses 7 to 8. Let me read it for us. It says, "And when you came to this place, Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us to battle, but we defeated them. We took their land and gave it for an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of the Manassites." In here, we notice that in verses 7 to 8, Moses suddenly switches to us instead of you. Did you catch that? When you're reading the passage, all of a sudden he's saying, you, your clothes did not wear out. Your sandals did not wear out. You did not go hungry. You didn't drink wine. And then all of a sudden in verses 7 to 8, he says, when you came to this place, and then these kings came out against us to battle, and then we defeated them. I don't think Moses is confused about his pronouns. And who is we? Could we be just Moses and the Israelites? Probably not. In verse 6, what does it say? He says, I am the Lord your God. Moses is not saying, I am the Lord your God. Moses is speaking on God's behalf. Or actually, God is speaking through Moses. And therefore, what is God saying? God is saying, we defeated them. We took their land and gave it for an inheritance. And it wasn't you, it wasn't Moses, it was God with the Israelite people. And as we look back, we take those photos, we reflect. I'm wondering how many of us will realize and understand it was God with us the whole time. It wasn't you, it wasn't your friend, it wasn't your family, it was you and God, your family and God, your friends and God, your life group and God. God was with us the whole time. And many of us, you know, we struggle with that. We're like, God, where were you when this happened? Some of us, 2018 was a year of tragedy. Death in the family. Illness. Failure. Losing a job. Getting unemployed. God, where were you when that happened? And Moses is saying, God has been with you the whole time. He's been with you the whole time, and you never did anything on your own. But God was always there doing it with you. I wanted to read this poem. I think it's a fairly famous poem. The author is disputed among different people, so I'll just leave it as disputed authorship. But it's called Footsteps in the Sand. And I just wanted to read it because it just gives us a glimpse into who God is or how He works sometimes, even when we don't see who He is or what He's done. It says, one night I had a dream. I dreamed I was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me, the other to the Lord. When the last scene of my life flashed before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand. I noticed that many times along the path of life, there was only one set of footprints. I also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times in my life. This really bothered me, and I questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there's only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I need you most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, my precious child, I love you and will never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. And it helps us to remember and see that sometimes the worst times that we went through, the hardest times, the most difficult times, the times that don't make any sense, the times that we ask, God, are you really good? God, are you really there? Those are the times that God was with us. Even though we didn't see it, even though we didn't feel it, He carried us through those moments. And now we look back as we pass by, as we pass through those hard times. We look and we give Him credit. We say, God, you were with us the whole time. You were with me, even through those trials. And I can give you thanks for that. And that's why, or that's how we want to recognize God in everything. And the second point is, not only that we want to recognize God in everything, but we need to recommit to God-centered living. We need to recommit to God-centered living. I wanted to make this a little bit interactive, and as we look into 2019, one thing that we often talk about is New Year's resolutions. And I wanted to get a gauge on how we feel about New Year's resolution, because I know many of us, we make it every year. Some of us, we don't believe in New Year's resolutions. We're like, get away from me, get behind me, Satan, because New Year's resolutions are a horrible thing. So I want you to get out your phone, and I think there will be some instructions here. Go to menti.com and use the code 829845. We're going to get a poll of what is your view on New Year's resolutions. There are going to be three options that come up on the screen, and you can select one. First is, I always make them and try to keep them. Second is, I don't think they work, but I still do it for fun. And then third is that they don't work and it's a waste of time. Okay, so you have three choices. If you want to make another choice, sorry, there's only three choices, but you'll see some of the results. So go ahead, pull out your phone, go to menti.com and type in 829845, okay? And you're going to see real-time results here to see what people are saying. Wow. What is your view on New Year's resolutions? As we talk about recommitting to God-centered living, what is your view on New Year's resolutions? I'll give us about 10 more seconds, and then we'll move on. Okay, so far we have mostly, I don't think they work, but still do it for fun. We have the cynical minority right there, right? The 7 people that say they don't work, it's a waste of time. And then the 12, I always make them and try to keep them. I won't do a poll to just poll those 12 people. We should ask those 12 people, do you actually keep them, right, for the rest of the year? All right, let's go to the next question. All right, if you've ever made a New Year's resolution, what was the result? If you've ever made a New Year's resolution, what was the result? If you've ever made a New Year's resolution, what was the result? Did anyone put succeed? No? Oh, there we go! All right. We have 4. We have 4 people that say success. I hope we're all being honest, right? Not just doing it for fun. Anyways, so this is good. So we have mostly not close, 15 total fail. Thank you for being honest. And then 7 who have kept their New Year's resolutions for the entire time. That's impressive, the whole year. I want to get to know you. I wanted to show an infographic, just a couple images of, there was a survey that was taken back, I think, a couple years ago about the success rate and also the categories of New Year's resolutions. So this is what typically people make New Year's resolutions about. So the first one shows the categories of resolutions. There we go. 38%, it's weight-related, so typical, like, I want to lose weight, I want to go to the gym. 34% is money-related. 47% is self-improvement, right? Whether it's getting better grades, getting a raise, quitting different things, learning something new. 31% is relationship-related. Some of you are like, oh, yes, I want to get into a relationship. Or, really, realistically, it's about spending more time with family and friends, okay? All right, it's volunteering to help others. But I know what all of you are thinking. And these are the typical things. And I'm guessing most of our New Year's resolution will fall into one of these 4 categories. The question is, how many percentage of people actually succeed or they fail? And this is, they asked, and this is what the results are. 8% succeed, 49% are not even close, and 24% are total failure. I think we did better than this infographic, right? So let's give each other a hand, okay? And if you look it up, some more statistics about resolutions is only 8% of people keep their resolutions for the entire year. Only 8% of people, 80% of people fail their resolutions by February. So it's those people who, you know, you're like, oh, I'm gonna work out and I'm gonna like get fit. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to go biking. And then you buy a new bike. You buy like a whole biking outfit. You know those people who have like all decked out, or those hikers who like they have the water bottle and the little like hose that comes out. You're like, I'm going to go hiking and getting fit. And you're like, you never use it. It just hangs there, right, the whole year. I don't know how many of us, we've experienced that, but there's something about resolutions that we just can't keep. And if you go online, you search how to keep your New Year's resolution, there's like hundreds and thousands of articles that teach you how to keep your New Year's resolution. But even if there are articles and you read it, that doesn't mean you keep your New Year's resolutions, does it? There's something about human nature, something about the way that we make commitments that prevents us from actually living them out or following them all the way through. And that's why when we talk about recommitting to God-centered living, I want to propose that actually most of our resolutions are self-centered. Most of the things that we want to see, that we want to change, is all about us. But when was the last time we said, God, the new thing that I want to commit to, the commitment that I want to make, the resolution, whatever you want to call it, the goal that I want to set,
I want to recommit to living for you. I want to structure and to shape my life so that it's God-centered instead of me-centered. So it's God-centered instead of self-centered. And Moses is now exhorting the Israelites to say, how can you now recommit in a God-centered way as you enter into the promised land? Let's read verses 9 to 11 as we continue on. It says, therefore, keep the words of the covenant and do them that you may prosper in all that you do. You are standing today, all of you, before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders and your officers, all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, the sojourner who is in your camp, from the one who chops your wood to the one who draws your water. Right in verse 9, he says, therefore. So everything that we're going to talk about in the second point is in light of what Moses talked about in the first point. And now recognizing that God is in everything. God has done everything. In this past year, God has accomplished everything. And he's with us in everything that we do. And now he's saying, therefore, in light of those things, now keep the words of the covenant. He's reestablishing the covenant that the Israelites made between God and the people. Keep them, obey them. And now the question is, how do we keep this covenant? There are two things that we notice are important about a recommitment to the covenant. And for us, as we look forward to 2019, about different goals or resolutions that we want to set in light of living in a God-centered way. The first thing that we notice is that any kind of recommitment should be made in the presence of all people. Any kind of recommitment should be made in the presence of all people. If we look at verse 10, we see there are three people that Moses says that the Israelites are standing today before. Right? He says they're standing before God, they're standing before the leaders, who are the heads of your tribes, your elders, your officers, all the men. And then three is you're standing before the general populace, your little ones, your wives, the sojourner, the one who chops wood, the one who draws your water. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, God, it makes sense. You make a commitment to God, you're supposed to keep that. God is the most important person that we should follow and obey. So we should make this covenant before God. Leaders, okay, it makes sense, right? We want to honor our leaders. They're the ones who are leading us. They're the ones who are exhorting us. So any kind of commitment we want to make, we want to, you know, stand before them and say, I want to do this. I want to follow through with it. The last one, that was a little bit harder to understand. Why should I make a commitment before my little ones, right? Some of us who are parents, like, if I'm going to make a commitment, do I have to tell my kid? Sometimes you might, because your kids keep you honest in the things that you say you'll do. Or there's your spouse, your wife, your husband. It makes sense because, you know, there's probably good accountability there. They know all the ins and outs of your life and they can keep you honest. But what about the foreigner who's in your camp, the sojourner? What about the one who chops your wood? What about the one who draws your water? These are the people that are serving you. They're your servants. They're your slaves. These are the people who are maybe insignificant in your life. I was just imagining, like, coming down from my tower, and usually there's like the uncle or auntie who sits in the tower and opens the door. Some of us, we have the estate with the locks. And I was just trying to imagine, like, coming down, and then I'm walking in, and then the auntie or uncle is like, hey, I haven't seen you running lately, right? Because, you know, in order to go run, I have to be in my running gear, I have to run, and they come and they see me, and they're always so nice that they unlock the door for me when I come back. They're like, I'm going, sorry, right? Like, oh, okay. You know, I can't imagine, like, the uncle or auntie, like, keeping me accountable for my workout goal. It's just like, it doesn't make sense. But I was thinking about it, it's like, you know what? Actually, every single person that I make if I'm making a commitment, if I'm making a statement, if I'm saying this is what I'm going to do, then I better be able to make that statement, that commitment before anyone, regardless of who they are, regardless of how well-educated, regardless of what authority, regardless of what position that they're in. Because it's really my integrity that's at stake. It's really who I am, the witness that I share or demonstrate to the other people. Why? Because the Israelites, they were supposed to be a people that were set apart for God. Moses and God knew that when they went into the promised land, that they would represent God to the people that were around them. In fact, they were supposed to drive everyone out. But to all the nations around them, they were supposed to be God's people, set apart, holy. They were supposed to represent God to the nations. And so it was for their integrity and for their witness that God was saying, you ought to be able to stand before all these people and to make this covenant, this commitment.
In 1 Peter 2, verse 12, in the New Living Translation, this is what the author Peter says, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior. They will give honor to God when he judges the world.
When you make this commitment before all people, it's no longer about you. It's about God's glory. It's no longer about, yes, in some ways it's about accountability. In some ways it's about community. But it's about God's glory. It's about me saying, yes, God, I will do this. Let your yeses be yes and let your noes be no. I will do this and I will do it because I'm going to do it, because that's who I am in my character. And as I do that and as I have integrity, then that's glorifying to you, God. That's my worship to you. And I better be able to say it in front of anyone, whether it's you, God, whether it's my leaders, whether it's any person on the street that I walk by. And these commitments, they ought to be made in the presence of all people. They ought to be made in community. Some of us, we think, oh, I'm just going to keep my New Year's resolutions to myself and I'm going to keep my goals to myself. I don't want to share it with anyone. Because as soon as I share it with someone, then, you know, it kind of makes it not so exciting for me to do that goal. Or I feel like I have to do it then. Or I don't want to feel obligated or burdened. Some of us, it shows that, you know, we're just lone rangers, or that we're self-sufficient in the things that we want to do. We don't recognize the power or importance of community in even setting some of these goals or resolutions, or making this covenant to God. I want to read a quote. Sorry, it's not up there, but from Drew Dick, from he wrote an article in Gospel Coalition actually the day before, talking about why community is so important when we make any kind of commitment or covenant. And he's recounting a story of a conversation with an older man that he had at the airport. He says, recently I struck up a conversation with an older man at the airport as we awaited our flight. I learned he was a recovering alcoholic who had been clean for years. When I praised his self-control, he demurred. Demurred means, you know, he kind of disregarded that. He says, self-control is important, he said, but if you just rely on self-control, you're dead. You need a community around you. I know alcoholics who haven't had a drop for 40 years and still go to the AA meetings. AA is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a community to help those who struggle with alcohol addiction. You need a community around you. I think that's true, and not just for alcoholics. Whether your goal is to stay sober or to start a new spiritual discipline, you weren't designed to go it alone. You need support and encouragement. The idea of a solitary saint may be appealing, but it isn't scriptural. Instead, the Bible speaks of people refining each other as iron sharpens iron, Proverbs 27, and spurring each other onto love and good deeds, Hebrews 10. And I'm wondering, as we think about goals and commitments and we look toward the new year, I want to encourage us to share it with someone. Share it with your life change group, your accountability partner. Share it with your life group. Share it with your spouse. Share it with your family. Share it with your friends who you're running the race together with. Share it so that when you're doing it together, and hopefully they're able to share some things with you, they're able to say, hey, let's run this race together. Let's help one another with these commitments that we're making. Because I want this to be a worship. I want this to glorify God in my integrity and my witness. But I know that I can't do it alone. I know that I'm not able to do it by myself. And I need your help to be able to move forward. The second thing that we notice is not only that these recommitments are in the presence of all people, but they're also established by God. These commitments are established by God. Let's finish and read verses 12 to 13. It says, so that you may enter into the sworn covenant of the Lord your God, which the Lord your God is making with you today, that he may establish you today as his people,
and that he may be your God, as he promised you, as he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now he's talking about now the result of making this stand, this commitment in front of all the people. And the effects of this covenant is that God is now saying, if you're making this covenant, now you are established as my people, and now I'm going to be your God. These are things that we all want. These are things that we all hope, that we are going to be God's people and that God is going to be our God. But when we realize, when we think about the nature of this covenant, the nature of this commitment for the Israelites, it was a really unbalanced covenant. Really, who is doing all the work? It's God doing all the work. When we make a covenant with God, it's really God who keeps all the promises. In verse 12, it says, and he's referring to the covenant, which the Lord your God is making with you today. It's not us making the covenant with God, it's God making the covenant with us, that he may establish you today as his people. It's not us establishing God as our God, it's God establishing us as his people, that he may be our God, as he promised us, as he swore. God is the one who's always initiating. God is the one who is always keeping his side of the bargain. And the last challenging question I have for us this morning is, who are we relying on when we make these promises? Who are we relying on when we make new commitments? When we recommit to God-centered living, who is it based on? Is it for ourselves? Is it because we think that we're strong enough, we're good enough? Or is it because we're saying, God, whatever it is that you want me to do, I want to do that, and I want to believe that you're going to give me the strength, the discipline, the ability to actually follow through. In the process of making New Year's resolutions, I'm wondering, how many of us, like, we pray when we make New Year's resolutions? Like, we earnestly sit down and like, that survey that we took is a little bit indicative. Most of us, we think New Year's resolutions are a waste or a total failure, or we just do it for fun because we don't actually ever keep them. But when was the last time we said, okay, God, this commitment I'm making, I'm committed to it. This is my word to you. And I'm not going to go back on it. That this is so important for me that regardless of what happens, regardless of what circumstances change, I'm going to stick through it. It's not going to be one of those commitments like, oh, in February, oh, I guess I didn't make a good commitment, or like, oh, I'm too lazy now, or I'll just do it next year. It's so easy for us in a non-committal generation to say we're going to do things, but we never follow through. Because our attitude when we made that commitment in the first place wasn't one that was of commitment to begin with. I'm wondering if this year we're going to have a different attitude as we recommit to living for God. We're not going to just flippantly say like, oh, I'm just going to do this or I'm going to do that. But we're going to say, God, as I'm praying, I really see and realize these are the things that you've done in my life that are so good. But, you know, I've seen many shortcomings or different areas of my life that really need work or change. And I know that I can't do it on my own. I tried last year. But God, I really want to believe that this year, because as I'm praying, you're just convicting me and I realize I'm repenting of my sin. And I want to do this for you. I want to do this because you're my God, because you're in control, because you're the one who I can rely on. And it's not going to be me who's going to be able to accomplish this commitment. But it's really going to be you, because this is so essential to my relationship with you. Like, I'm wondering, this is kind of a side note, but I'm wondering how many of us, like, we tried to read the Bible last year. In the beginning, we started a new Bible reading plan. We said, we're going to start this new two-year Bible reading plan. And some of us are like, great. Like, previous years, we did a one-year Bible reading plan. We tried to read the whole Bible in 1 year. It was too hard, too long. And we're like, yes, 2 years. Now I can read half as much of the Bible every single day. I don't know why we should be excited about that. But no, but it's, in some ways, it's, you know, okay, it's less content. So we're, okay, you know, God, I could do this. But last year, we said we're going to do that. And this year, we're like, oh, God, I just gave up. Too hard.
And I want to challenge us this year. Like, I'm wondering, did that conviction die? Did God say, don't read your Bible anymore? Don't get to know Him anymore? I don't think so. That's between you and God, whatever it is that God is putting on your heart. But I want to challenge some of us that we gave up reading the Bible this past year. Or maybe we had some good weeks, some off weeks. Or some of us, we gave up because like, oh my God, I'm so far behind. And some of us were perfectionistic. So if we can't catch up, we might as well not try. I want to challenge us to commit to reading the Bible. And I know, like, we're now in starting year two. So you're going to start from halfway through the Bible, finishing the last part, the last half of the Bible that we're reading currently. And some of us are like, no, I want to read the Bible all the way through. Like, just stop being selfish, okay? Don't make it about yourself. Don't make it about your preferences or you reading the whole Bible. Just start. Just join us together with the whole church. We're reading it together as a church because that gives us an opportunity to encourage one another as we read it. And you can go online at hongkong.hmcc.net. There's a little box there that has the Bible reading for that day. Every single day, it changes at 12 midnight. On the mobile app, it's there. Every single day, it's a new plan. It's a new passage. Someone, I think, made a Google Calendar with each passage for each day. You can use that to remind you. Commit this year. Let's read the Bible. Because that's our way to understand who God is. That's our way to commune with Him. That's our way to build a relationship with Him. There's some other things that I want to encourage us to be able to do as we rely on God, is whether it's really develop your prayer life. Think about committing to community. Some of us, we've received a lot this past year. Make a commitment to say, God, I want to be a part, active member, contributor to community. I don't want to just sit there and receive. I want to give. I want to be an active part. I want to love on people. I want to pray for people. I want to give care packages to people. I want to be in that baptism pool next time. Not that you can control what God does, but you can make the investment to say, I want to help one more person experience and understand who Jesus is, who hasn't previously understood. God, I want to work earnestly this year. God, I want to love my family this year. I want to call them. I don't want to be that kid who's always called by their parents and spoiled. But I want to love them by initiating and showing them that I love and I care for them. There's so many things that is on God's heart that I'm wondering if we pray and we say, God, I want to rely, I want to trust in You to make certain commitments, to recommit to living for You more than anyone else. I want to believe that You're going to help me to do that. You're going to be the one who establishes Your covenant. You're going to be the one who gives me the strength to be able to follow through. And how do we know that God is going to follow through on this? Jeremiah 31, verses 31 to 34, it says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity. I will remember their sin no more." And in this passage in Jeremiah, the prophet, he's saying, this old covenant, all the laws that we're trying to do on our own, all the regulations, all the goals, all the next steps that we're somehow trying to muster up on our own strength, by our own power, saying, that's the old covenant that I'm going to get rid of. And that there's a new covenant that God is the one initiating. And how does He initiate it? He doesn't say it explicitly here, but He references, this is a prophetic reference to Jesus. He is the new covenant. He is the one who is forgiving of our sin. All the ways that we failed, all the ways that we were disappointed, all the ways that we did not recognize who God was or what He did. We try to do it all on our own strength. God is saying this new covenant is only possible because of Jesus Christ, who died on the cross, who is now for the forgiveness of your sins. And now that you're forgiven of your sin, now that you realize you have a relationship with God, now that you realize you are His people, that He is your God, now you're able to live out the covenant, the commitment, because you want to, because He is your God, and because it is a joy and a delight to follow through on the things that you said you would do for Him. That's it. So when we recognize we failed, we recognize we fell short, we recognize that we're broken, that we're sinful, that we didn't deserve anything. In fact, all the things that He gave us in 2018 were just His grace and His mercy. And as we're praying, we're saying, God, what is it that you want me to commit to and do in the next year? It's only by His grace, and it's only by His love, and it's only by His forgiveness that we're able to say, now, God, I want to recommit to loving you and following you, because you've loved me already, because you took the initiative, because you made me your child, your son, and your daughter. And that's why, or that's how, we're going to be able to make these commitments, and we're going to recommit to God-centered living. That's why the one thing for us this morning is we must see what God has done to step forward in the new year. We have to see what God has done in order for us to be able to step forward in the new year. I want to give us some next steps as we close out 2018 and look forward to 2019. First is set aside time to remember and recognize what God has done in 2018. Nothing new. I feel like most of our next steps is like, okay, remember, read your Bible, remember who God is. But the issue is actually doing it. So what I want you to do right now is think your schedule this week. You have tomorrow's New Year's Eve. The next day is New Year's, which is a public holiday, so hopefully you aren't working. Some of you might still be working. In these 2 days, or maybe you have some free time, some students, you're not back in school yet, you have all week. This is the danger with having so much time, is you think, oh, there's going to be more time later. But right now, in your mind or on your phone right now, put some time in your calendar. Say, this is time where I'm going to reflect. This is time where I'm going to set aside to remember what God has done. And I'm going to commit to it. Because right now, my attitude, my perspective, what I think about this past year, I don't see what God has done. My attitude isn't a healthy attitude right now. And the second thing is share with people how you want to recommit to living for God in 2019. As you're reflecting, as you set aside a time to think back what God has done, hopefully there now comes to mind as you're praying, you're meditating, you're saying, God, what is it that you want for me in 2019? And God will hopefully bring some things into mind, whether it's reading your Bible, join us for the Bible reading plan, whether it's committing to times in prayer, whether it's investing in community, loving on others, working well, whatever it might be. Share it with someone. Share it with your family. Share it with your accountability partner. Just message them right now. Say, hey, I'm supposed to reflect, and I'm supposed to share with you something. And then later on, when you say, oh, I don't have anything, they're going to ask you, like, weren't you supposed to share something with me? That's the best accountability right there. And know that as you share, it's not God, it's not yourself, it's not our self-sufficiency, our self-ability that's going to be able to do it. But it's as we trust in God, He's going to allow us to actually fulfill and follow through on these commitments. Can we stand as we close and in response? As we're just sitting there, I think, I was like, wow, 2018 has gone by so fast. I can't believe it's 2019. I'm sure some of us have had conversations like that. And for many of us, the years just go by faster and faster and faster. And this is the difficult part, is that we can let another year go by, another New Year's go by. And then in 2019 to 2020, just be in the same place over again. But I'm wondering if we will say, you know what, God? I'm not going to do New Year's the same way every single year. I'm not going to just make these flippant commitments over and over again. I want to commit to you something that I'm actually going to follow through on, that I actually want to do, because it's something that you want me to experience in a relationship with you. And so as we respond, I'm wondering if we can just pray that back to God. Say, God, help me. I can't do this. Most of us, we're probably cynical and wondering, like, you know, it's not going to follow through. We're not going to follow through. But I want us just to respond to God and just say, God, help me to see who you are and rely on you as we look toward the new year. Let's put our weight on God. Let's rely on him. Let's not trust in ourselves. Let's say, God, I want to trust in you. I want to give everything to you. My thoughts, my hearts, my desires, my everything. Because only in you can we find fullness of joy. Only in you can we find hope. Only in you can we find peace. So can we just do that? Can we just begin to open our mouths and just pray? And just say, God, I want to trust in you this year. I want to make commitments that are started by you, in light of you, in light of a relationship with you. Let's just do that. Let's just pray on our own, just for a couple of moments. Let's just begin to ask God to help us to trust in him more than anyone else. Let's pray to